As oceans warm and sea levels rise, local and state governments are grappling with how to prepare. WWNO coastal reporter Tegan Wendland spent a week in Rhode Island studying coastal issues at the Metcalf Institute. She spoke with the director of the state's Coastal Resources Management Council, Grover Fugate, about what Rhode Island is doing to prepare. He says it's a small state with a lot of coast.
So can you talk a little bit about the landscape of Rhode Island? What percentage of the landmass here is coastal?
Well, there's no part of the state that isn't within 40 miles of the coastline, so it's 100% coastal, in my opinion.
And what types of coastal issues are you facing here?
Well, right now we're developing a plan to look at how climate change is affecting our shoreline. So there are three principal threats that we see with that. One is sea level rise. The other are tropical, meaning hurricane, or extratropical, meaning nor'easters, that affect our shoreline. And the third one is erosion. The thing with that is that they interact with each other such that it worsens the impacts from each other. So there's a synergistic impact that is associated with those as we look particularly forward in time. So we're developing a plan that not only looks at what the current threat is, but what our threat might be in the future, and give predictions for that, and then also information we can give to people to help plan for that future so that we're not building for today's standard, for instance, we're building for tomorrow's standard.
So you've listed a whole series of issues that we also face in Louisiana. Perhaps subsidence is a bigger issue for us than here in Rhode Island because we are a deltaic region. But we've developed a coastal master plan to help guide our restoration and protection efforts in the future. Although now we've come to recognize that we won't be able to save all of coastal Louisiana. Some will be lost forever. What does your plan look like?
Our plan is we're developing what we call scenario-based planning right now. And a lot of that drives off the design life of the areas that we're looking at. So what we're trying to do is, because we permit down to the individual residence level, we're trying to give the information necessary so that people can take the scenarios, take a design life, choose the scenarios that match with that design life, and then show how they're going to become resilient to those future forces. The design life is really dependent on them, but a lot of this all feeds back into the marketplace. So eventually, as buyers become more sophisticated and understand this, it will potentially impact the price of homes. So therefore, it is incumbent, I think, on people to think about the future price of that home and what they want to design to. In other words, i.e., you may want to design to a higher standard so that you have a marketable house by the time you reach the end of your mortgage period.
So you're kind of describing a viewer that people could use to see an estimate of how much flooding they might experience on their property during a given time period. Right. We have something similar in Louisiana. Would you say that people in Rhode Island are generally aware of coastal issues and concerned about rising sea levels?
I think, yes, they are. In fact, I think there was a national poll that was done that showed Rhode Islanders in general are very aware of this. Through the coastal program, we've been having this discussion for over a decade with the state. So early on, there was not a lot of success in understanding that climate change was impacting the shoreline, but certainly there have been enough stories through the media now, I think, that people actually see it, they understand it, and realize that it's occurring. And we can go around places and show people today where storm drains that used to drain water out before are actually acting as inlets, bringing seawater into their areas now because of climate change and sea level rise.
In our new coastal master plan in Louisiana, we've recognized that there are a few methods of restoration that are most effective. So now we're really prioritizing Mississippi River diversions to rebuild marshes that have become open water and rebuilding barrier islands because they're very effective buffers against storm surge. What sorts of restoration and mitigation projects do you have going on here?
Well, we're trying to restore for both the natural systems and also the built environment at the same time. So some of the things that we have ongoing, which I think is already been occurring quite frequently, particularly in Louisiana, has actually probably become an industry in Louisiana, is salt marsh restoration, i.e. trying to get the salt marsh capital to build up, elevating the salt marsh so it can withstand sea level rise going into the future. That's one of the things that we've been looking at.
Which would protect the houses and towns behind them.
Right, right. They're very effective buffers, and also they have many other functions that are valuable to us. From the built environment, there are two basic premises that we look at in terms of helping people, and that is elevation and distance back from the shoreline. So the greater they can set those structures back, or the higher they can set those structures, that increases their resiliency both for current storms and into the future.
Do you have a government program then to help people do that?
No, what we're trying to do is get them at a point in the system where they are already making that decision and providing the information so that they can build to a higher standard. So the trigger point for the scenario-based permitting system that I was talking about is when they are either building a new home or substantially improving that home, then they would have to go through this process. So that's at a point where the marginal cost of bringing the structure up to a new standard is very, very low.
So basically you're mandating that people consider raising their homes if they're building in a certain area.
Yes. And we're providing that information to show them not what the current floodplain looks like, but also what the future floodplains look like. So you may not be in a flood zone today, but you may be within 30 years. And that will impact your mortgage because of the flood insurance aspect of it. So we will show you that. We will give you the elevation that's expected there. And you have an opportunity at that point to elevate your home above the current standards so that you, when you, as I said, get to the end of that mortgage, you've got a home that's marketable.
Are you disincentivizing development in coastal areas at all, or considering buyouts of homes that are in areas that are sure to see, you know, feet of sea level rise in the coming decades?
The buyout question I can definitely answer, and that is no, we're not. The issue, I think, becomes an equity issue at some point because sea level rise is going to continue well into the next century. And therefore, at what point do you stop? Because there's not enough money in any treasury to buy the homes out that are going to be impacted by this. The other issue is whether we're disincentivizing people. We have regulations that prevent development in certain areas, so we already have prohibitions in certain places. But what we're trying to do is provide information to the marketplace so the marketplace prices that risk. I think if you can get to that point, it becomes a market issue, and that drives most of the changes that we'll see. Just to give you an example, if you build to today's standard, the sea level rise estimates in this area at least are that by the time you get to the end of your 30-year mortgage period, your home will be below base flood elevation. Last time we had an experience with that, which was called the Biggert Waters Act, which adjusted the prices to become more actuarial based. Homeowners' policies in this state were $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, as much as $60,000. That tanked the real estate markets in certain areas in this state. They went to virtually zero. If you can provide the information so that people can understand that risk and price that risk, I think that's the way that we're trying to get the system to go, because the marketplace is going to be much more effective in dealing with that than we can as a regulatory program.
Are you looking at all to Louisiana for guidance? Or
we have looked at what's going on in Louisiana, yes, and we've been very encouraged by some of the things that we're seeing down there. The fact that you are facing up to the issue that certain areas of the state aren't going to be able to be saved, and that you're going to have to make those adjustments. That's a very courageous statement to make, at least from a political standpoint. So I think that is commendable, and we have trying to follow what you're doing, and I think we're following in a very similar vein in many ways, with trying to show areas that are going to be lost, areas where we may have to focus in on trying to save because of the infrastructure that's there, and then trying to make those decisions, particularly from the state side, in terms of the infrastructure investments, where we're going to make future investments and to what degree or what standard we will build to for those future investments.
Thank you, Grover Fugate, Executive Director of the Rhode Island Coastal Resources Management Council.
Thank you.